I knew that if I begged her over and over and over again, eventually Laura House would come crawling back with her tail between her legs. What a victory for me, David Feldman. Laura House's new CD is Mouth Punch. Buy it on Amazon and iTunes. And she joins us today from Hollywood. Hello, Laura.
Hi, everybody. Joining you from Hollywood. That sounds so much fancier than
Where
it is,
you?
But I guess that is the reality.
Where are you?
I'm right in the middle of Los Angeles.
Yeah. And you were in London.
I was just in London. That was a real career highlight. I was flown to London to write on a show for 2 weeks.
Wow.
And a comedy show. And I just felt like you guys like invented comedy, but now you need me.
What's the show? That's fantastic. What's the show?
It's a kids show, and it's so weird that everything is on the internet all the time, but it's actually only available there on the BBC. It's called The Secret Life of Boys, and it won a BAFTA its first year. It does really well. People really like it. So, you know, you've been in the business a while, like all jobs. A friend of mine makes it.
Oh, I see.
That's the Hollywood thing, right? Like the first job, like you get your first job. You're like, I worked and I have an agent and here's a package. And then after that, like you just work for your friends.
Mm-hmm. And then they stop being your friends because.
And then eventually you don't even have that. And you go, I should have had a regular job. Mm-hmm. And now I'd be enjoying pension.
The reason I lose friends at work is a friend will hire me and then I'll say, you know what? I can always find a friend, but an opportunity like this only comes around once in a lifetime. I'm going to step on his throat or her throat and stab him in the back and move ahead because I can always find another friend.
Oh, okay. Good point.
Yeah. That's what friends are for.
Yeah. But they are actually like friends are easier to find than good jobs in this town.
Friends are easier to find
in this business. Yeah. I could find friends all day long. No problem.
Yeah. But, as long as you don't get successful.
But this was great. It's a guy who I've known him from a writer's group for a long time. And I also love this because I feel like in my head and in a lot of people, like what you think Hollywood is like whatever was in Deadline that day or Variety or, you know, whatever's in your consciousness of what's on TV or what was just on the talk show you watched mm-hmm. or whatever. But there's so many moving pieces. So this guy, you know, never on the cover of, you know, Writers Guild magazine or whatever, but he wrote for The Office just for a very short time. And then he wasn't getting work and he also has Canadian citizenship. So he worked in Canada. There's a show called Little Mosque on the Prairie mm-hmm. and he had worked on that. And then he just got into some connection. He pitched a show to BBC. He's worked on some Nickelodeon shows out here, but he pitched a show to BBC and they made it and they've been making it for 3 years now. So he's this showrunner this international showrunner, I guess.
Is there a lot of pressure working for the Beeb as I understand they call it? They call it the Beeb?
I didn't hear anybody call it that, but.
Oh. And do you have to wear a tuxedo?
I did. I had to wear, well, first of all, it's comedy. So you have to do like a silly walk. Like you have to, you have to reference a Monty Python bit as you enter. No, I actually, we went in the office to a production company there that has the show. Cause I was like, where's the BBC? But they did say it is fancy. And they said every like conference room is named after that show you've heard, you know, like, oh, we'll meet in the Monty Python room. And like, they're very, I guess it's like, it's the BBC plus everything about it is like, yeah, we're the BBC. Like we will remind you of this in the bathroom every turn.
Mm.
So yeah, it did feel a little like when I came to Hollywood, like, you know, 20 years ago, somebody told me about the difference. I knew somebody who wrote on Wings, and they said that the Frasier writers were down the hall, and that they were just talking about the writer's room. And they said, like, Wings was like, you know, pizza boxes and, you know, Capri Sun, you know, foil all wadded up. And then they said, like, it just makes such a difference. Like, down the hall, they said the Frasier staff is like, they're like drinking out of like crystal chalices, and they're, you know, they have like
poppers, amyl nitrate,
yeah, and they have
disco,
like,
balls.
They're maybe, but they're having like, I guess in like the very fancy echelon, but they're like, you know, fine china. And so it was a little bit fancy of, you know, it wasn't just like Diet Coke across the hall. It was, you know, they're constantly asking if you want tea.
I can't think of anything better than working in London with the British, right? I mean, that's just, that has to be as
close
to.
It was a dream.
Yeah,
it was actually perfect. Like, of all the, yeah, I even got sick and was like, it's still perfect. It's still amazing.
What's it like to get sick in London? Because the closest thing they have to a religion in London is their healthcare service, right?
Yeah, I know. I was almost ready. I think I got sick because my body knew it was a safe place.
Right.
Hey, just let it go. I felt like any disease, like, you know, now's the time. If there's some horrible thing to announce in the body, you know, this is the place.
So how sick did you get?
I just got a little sick and had to miss a day of work.
Did you go to the hospital?
No.
Oh.
I was just a little sick. It was just a little too, I'm going to sound like a baby. It was just a little too cold the first week and a little too wet. And we had not figured out the heating to the Airbnb yet. So, like, I slept cold. So I just kind of caught a cold. But then I was.
And what are the hours like? Do they?
Not a great story.
It's a fantastic circus. It's Laura House.
So many concerns. I was a little sick. It wasn't bad. And then I was well. Hours were right. We went in, we started at 10, and then we worked till technically 6, but we usually stayed till 7. And what had happened, you know, all the scripts had been written, you know, a season is short, 10 episodes. So 10 scripts had been written freelance. And then we just took one a day and we punched it up and worked out any issues and made it as, you know, I feel like we made every script like 35% better. You know, like, they were fine, they were great and good. And then, you know, you just really got to look at them all and tie them to each other and, you know, have a room full of people sort of weighing in on things. And it was great because you've been in rooms out here. Like, it didn't go on for 9 months. You know, like, we didn't. It was 2 weeks. You were never going to get tired of it or annoyed with people or whatever. It was amazing.
And then you go out at night, or are you tired? What did you go to the theater?
I did. I saw Macbeth at the National Theater.
Wow.
It was okay. What?
It wasn't, you know, it great. Was great. Who starred in it?
Rory Kinnear.
Greg Kinnear's brother. I love him.
Is he?
No,
I don't know. He, you know what's so great is, do you watch Black Mirror? I know your fans do.
Yes, of course.
Yeah,
it's a show that it's in my queue, and I know it's great, and now everybody hates me
for not watching it.
Yeah, it's in my queue.
I love your defense of it's in your queue, but there is, all right, I'll just talk to your fans for a minute. There's a great episode, the first one, I believe, of season two, where the prime minister, it's set up where a guy has kidnapped the princess, and the prime minister, to set her free, the prime minister has to make love with a pig. And this was oddly, like, 2 months later, it was clearly in the collective unconscious, or the writer knew. But then the prime minister, a story came out that he had put his privates in the mouth of a cooked pig in college. And that was a little little hard to get past. But so anyway,
you're talking
so
about Theresa. Rory. Was Theresa May, the prime minister,
the other guy. I forget his name. I'd look it up, but it would make noise and you get mad.
Okay. So.
No, but Rory Kinnear played the pig fucker, basically. And I was so as fancy as it is to like, oh, I'm going to see Macbeth, you know, I'm going to see amazing Shakespeare at the National Theater. The hillbilly in me was like, oh, my God, that pig fucker's in it.
Oh, he's the guy. I see. Yeah.
He was the actor. He was the same actor. So I was like, I love that guy.
Now, would you know if Macbeth was bad?
Wouldn't
you just automatically assume you didn't understand it?
No, here's what's funny is I grew up, I am a hillbilly from Texas, but my mom dragged us to, my mom was an educator and so was her best friend. And she dragged us to Shakespeare in the Park, every summer. So I grew up watching probably not good Shakespeare. And then I also have an English degree. So we're forced to look at it. But this was, I think I would know because I think this might have been not great Shakespeare.
How do you know?
Well, it's what's interesting. The acting was great. You know, he was great. And it was... but it was set in, and I guess this is the thing with Shakespeare that is controversial, but also necessary. Like, I think very few people, you don't really want to see Macbeth as is because it's 4.5 hours long, and taking place necessarily, you know, in Scotland at that time. So people will update it or do a twist on it or whatever. And then people go to see it and they hate that. Oh, the updated is terrible. So Shakespeare's such a weird.
Well, I would assume they make it more about Lady Macbeth.
This. That would make sense in this time that it would sort of. And they did highlight that was interesting. That's interesting. You would say that. Because they probably did that because...
Because she kind of made him do things he didn't want to do.
It was very much... This was... they really hung their hat on her being...
Manipulative.
And him being...
Weak.
Kind of a pussy.
Yeah. Well, he is weak and kind of a pussy.
Yeah. He did what she said, and then he constantly felt bad about it.
Yeah.
So there was never... So I don't have any controversy with it. I was just enjoying a play at the National Theater. But during the intermission, you would hear Londoners talk shit about the production because they're in their own backyard. Like I'm from Texas. So I'm just like, ooh, everything here must be fancy. And they were like, you know, of course it got shit reviews and not the acting, but it was set in post-apocalyptic. So it was, the stage was kind of bare and there was a big bridge that came down that moved and it kind of separated the sides. But
so they didn't want to spend money on a set. So that's good. Okay.
Well, it was, but it was that kind of post-apocalyptic where like they definitely spent money on it. But it was made to look like a cave or like underground. So when he was king of Scotland, it just meant like he was like king of the homeless people who live underground in this post-apocalyptic.
Like a bunker. Like there
wasn't and then we would hear people said that. They were like, there's no crown. Like there was no, like he was, you, the guy who was king wore like a red, kind of what, Donald Glover wore to the Solo premiere as Lando Calrissian, like just like a red suit, like you're the hottest guy at the disco. And so that was the king. And then Macbeth became king and then he got that red blazer. It was kind of crazy.
So you had a good time though.
I had a good time.
Did
but
it?
Yes.
Did
that
it?
Was Macbeth.
So it was 2 weeks. in London.
Yeah, I was there 2 weeks.
Did it creep in a petty pace from day to day?
No, it was awesome. I mean, it was a dream. Like when my friend started saying he was hoping, you know, he was like, I'm trying to get them to let me bring you guys to London, you know, but it's not certain. I instantly put it out of my head of like, well, that's, you know, don't count on that. And then as it was happening, I was just like, oh my God, somebody's flying me to Europe, you know, to write comedy. That's amazing. And then, yeah, every day was awesome. I love to travel, and I lived in, I believe I mentioned probably all the time that I was a foreign exchange student. So like, I love to just go live somewhere for a little bit.
Now you, last time, you are in love. Can I ask you a personal question?
Oh boy.
Please don't tell me you broke up with...
Did I cheat? With Boingo? No. He's here. He's in the other room.
Oh, good. Laura's in love.
Our year anniversary was yesterday.
Your what?
Our 1 year anniversary was yesterday, and it's been quite a year.
And he's perfect. He's the saxophone player for Oingo Boingo.
Trumpet, yeah.
He plays the trumpet for En Vogue.
Yes, uh-huh.
No, he's the trumpet.
The choreographer for Paula Abdul.
He plays the trumpet, and yeah. He has an amazing umbrature, and he's a great kisser. And you don't need to tell me that. I know that. I know that.
Everybody knows. That's why you go for the horn, guys.
So did he come with you?
No, he didn't.
I don't need to pry into your personal life.
No, that's just like a whole financial thing of like, you know, we would love that if it comes up and you have the extra, you know, couple of grand to bring to bring your guy along, you know, that would be great. But
you know my theory about relationships.
Don't have them.
There are 7 good years in a relationship.
Oh.
So the more time you spend away from one another, the longer it lasts.
Oh, I see.
But living on top of one another, there are only 7 good years.
Interesting.
So the more traveling you do away from each other.
That's interesting for... That may be true globally, but also specifically, Chris Rock said something very similar in his special. I mean, he made it funny.
Oh, that's so it wasn't slim. What did he say?
What? No, but he was talking about his divorce and that he was just saying like, you know, his parents were together all those years because they never saw each other and they didn't have texting. He was like, by the time if I go away, by the time I get home, we've had 15 text exchanges all day. He said that she would say like, you know, oh, you come home, you never want to talk about your day. And he was like, we know all about each other's day. He was like, I know everything you did today and how all of your friends felt about it.
Do you think there are couples that are together and in a committed relationship via Skype?
Oh, yeah, probably. You have to think with the internet, there's just every type of everything. So, yeah, I think now it's like people are made a certain way. Like we can adjust our surroundings so much that I think people are made a certain way and they just kind of, if they put themselves out in the world, someone will come back to them like, oh, I'm exactly like that too, or I'm this way that's a perfect fit for that. And I think like, yeah, and there's probably some very happy
Skype couples.
Yeah, I think for sure. But on the what you said and Chris Rock said, like, but comedians, like the job of it is to go away by yourself and be on stage by yourself and be in a room by yourself and then come back into the fold on occasion. And I think like, so that's probably true of comedians.
When you bring
more
somebody,
so than, you know, I think some people are like, just like some people live a block away from where they were born, you know, like. Some people just want that.
Traveling on the road as a performer,
mm-hmm.
do you want your loved one with you, or is that a distraction?
I'm good away. Is that a good way to put it? I like the idea of a home base to come back to.
So if you have a loved one who wants to travel with you on a gig and you're staying in a hotel and you have to perform, their needs get in the way, right?
Well, I guess there's pros and cons, and I think I would lean into whichever is happening. So to me, it would be great to have him on sometimes when I go, and then sometimes it's fine to not have him. And it's the same with him. He goes on gigs too. So like last year I traveled many places with him.
But you're going to drain each other of your essence before the performance.
Well, I think you just have to just leave them alone, you know, before their performance. Like for him as a musician, like he has sound checks and stuff all day. So you don't see him before a performance. He's at sound check and then he's sitting at the venue for 5 hours and then they play. For me, I have said to him like, hey, I have to be quiet, before a show. If I talk too much before a show, I feel all talked out by the time I get on stage. And he got that.
I'm going to ask you a female question.
These aren't very funny answers. I'm so sorry.
I'm going to ask you a female question. I'm not going to even dignify what you just said.
I'm just being all real and stuff. Yawn.
I'm going to ask you a female question.
Okay, female.
Are you angry before you go on stage?
No, I never thought about that.
You're not fueled by rage and anger and wanting to destroy things?
I think, no. No, I was when I started more so. I felt like I really had things I wanted to tear into. But now it feels so overwhelming. It seems almost so hopeless to try to, talk about something and think it would change, that I feel more hey, people in the room, thanks for coming. I'm more I host a show at the Improv and I feel a little more I guess nurturing toward people in the room.
Why I hate myself.
Yeah, I do the How to Hate Yourself show.
You do the How to Hate Yourself show at the Improv.
Yeah.
How often?
Monthly.
It's a monthly show.
The next one is June 2nd.
And who's going to be on it?
I'm booking it right now. So I would be lying if I told you, but I'm just now sending out emails. But in the past, people talk about Dana Gould and Laura Keitlinger, and Baron Vaughn keeps wanting to do it, and we're trying to figure out his schedule, but Deb DiGiovanni, she's done it. She's awesome.
And this is talking about how to hate yourself.
Well, it's sort of sarcastically talking about it, as if that's what you should be doing. But it's kind of, it's funny, but I set it up so comics can be vulnerable about being honest about that. I think everyone has this a self-sabotage voice in their head.
And I don't. Just kind of fascinated. I don't.
No, I know you don't, obviously. Yours is, it's not just a little voice in your head. It's that's just your voice.
Yeah, I don't have a self-sabotage. I don't have talent. But I don't have self-sabotage. I really don't. I just don't have enough talent to succeed.
Oh, interesting.
I don't understand self-sabotage.
Oh.
I understand cutting because it makes me feel alive and it's the only thing I can control. Oh.
Well, all right. I can see that.
I don't understand self-sabotage.
I guess for me, I used to just think it was reality. If I had a thought of I suck, or I'm some version of I'm not good enough, I just thought that was a fact. And it was actually, I feel like meditation helped me see, like, you can kind of separate from your thoughts a little. And I just saw, like, oh, there's like an, like some part of my brain that just makes these thoughts all the time of, you know, me, you know, of like doubt and stuff. And then sometimes they're just bananas. And so I'm kind of fascinated by, I don't know, when people can talk about what it is, or maybe if it, where it came from, or a story they, where they blew it because of that voice or whatever. But I'm starting to think maybe I shouldn't talk about it, because I maybe think about it too much now.
Do we blow things because we realize they're not worth having? Is that self-sabotage to...
Do you think so? I mean, I kind of do think there's a fear of success, or like a fear of... Because it's like a place you've never gone before. So in some way, fear of success can be like fear of the unknown. Or I think you can have like weird ideas about money. Like if you think, you know, rich people are assholes, then you, it might be hard to make a lot of money, because you're like inherently don't want to.
Is that necessarily self-sabotaging, or is that looking at what you have to do to make money or have success and say, it's not worth it, I don't want to become that person? How is that self-sabotage?
Well, because I think, why would you necessarily become a person you don't like because you've made some, because you've achieved some certain level of success? You know, there are people who are stars or run shows or, you know, successful, who are like perfectly nice people, and then, you know, then there are the other people who we've worked with.
But suppose it's not success on your terms. Suppose you go in to read, to play the daughter on the David Feldman show.
Mm-hmm.
And you read the script. I know this would be hard for you to believe, but the script is stupid, and it would mm-hmm. be demeaning and degrading. It would pay you a lot of money to play my daughter on a sitcom. But it would just be bad. And then you'd become famous as my daughter wherever you went. And you read the sides and you go, all right, I'll go audition for it. And as you're walking in, you see my smug, self-serving grin. Hey, look at me, Laura. I'm in charge. And your stomach just starts, you're disgusted and repulsed. And you blow the audition because you don't want to work with me. And you're driving home and you call your agent and say it didn't go well, and they accuse you of self-sabotage as opposed to self-preservation.
I think those are just two different scenarios. Like I think that might sometimes be the case, and then I think sometimes the case can be like, you know, oh, I'm auditioning for this role and I'm going to be opposite John Travolta. Okay, I really want it. And you know, like psych yourself out so much of, you know, like being deluded about what it might lead to, or being too nervous, or just feeling like, oh, you know, why would they want me? And then, you know, whatever choices you make, I think people, you can get in your own head about,
I think we're all,
I don't know, endeavoring.
I think we're all,
those are like two different things. What?
I think we're all where we need to be.
Do you, when did you get all spiritual?
I just look at the world and I travel with Christian ministries.
I love that would be like such a great short speech. And now David Feldman, I think we're all where we're supposed to be, and then walk off.
How do you accept where you are? Ugh. How do you say, this is where it is, and thank you? Because wanting more is what creates pain.
Yeah. I agree.
Are you yawning?
Sorry. I did yawn. I struggle with that. I struggle. Sometimes I'm...
3 times 6 is 18.
What?
And depreciate
Are you doing your taxes?
What? Huh? No.
I guess I go. What are you? Are you vomiting?
No.
I'm trying to tell a story.
Sorry.
I get your point.
Well, you yawned.
Yeah. Sorry.
And that is, you know, that hurts my feelings.
I'm sorry. But I was talking.
Yeah, but you were yawning through.
So maybe it's like, it's not a comment on you.
Everything's a comment on me. How do we accept, because you have a black belt in a form of transcendental meditation. We talk about this all the time, but you're a world champion meditator. You've studied. Yeah. You've studied with the greats.
I've studied with a couple of greats.
Do they pound their chest and say, "I am the greatest meditator in all the world"?
Kind of. I mean, I have found that when someone gets a level of, I have found that there are people with, like, you know, a good message, and, you know, maybe you teach a meditation or you write a book or whatever it is. And then there's a point, and it's like, can be like a cool movement. And then there's a certain point where it's fame, just like anything else, mm-hmm. where it's like, you know, you might as well play guitar or whatever. So, yeah, it's not so much the chest beating, but yeah, I do. I know you were being like sort of.
Yeah.
That was rhetorical, but I do think actually that's pretty common.
How do we accept where we are? Like right now, you yawned. That was a sign that, you know, you're okay with this, right? This is what it is.
The yawning, I think it was a sign that I was up at 5:30. I struggle with it. I actually, that's something I really try to watch out for, because I do know that my, just like you were saying, when I'm miserable, you know, or when I'm upset, it's because I'm, you know, often afraid of losing something I have or not getting something that I want, and or feeling, or I guess the real problem is like comparing myself to people. It's like, it's hard, and it's hard in you know, not every business has this aspect, I guess. I guess any office, you sort of know who's ranked, whatever. But, mm-hmm. you know, in Hollywood, you're like, you're like drive down the street and like, oh, there's my friend on a billboard.
Right.
And then you're like, I'm not on a billboard. Should I be on a billboard? Mm-hmm. And like, did I make every wrong choice? And it's really, you know, you really have to consciously not go down that.
But don't you want to be on a billboard for the right reasons? Do you want to be like the news?
You mean like selling milk?
Yeah, the News at 10 team. I always look at the News at 10 team. We got you covered, and your face is blown up. And I think, all right, suppose I was that guy. And I'd think, if I were that guy, I would look at me on the bus or the billboard and think, so I guess this is supposed to be good, right?
Yeah.
I should be proud of this.
I do. I hear what you're saying, and it's adulthood is sort of challenging at every turn, because that's, you know, on another side of it is, you know, having been exposed to so many people and jobs at this point, I kind of There's such a dark underbelly to all the success I've ever seen that I kind of go, ugh.
I was
then question, like, what do I even want anymore? But all that's it's a challenge. But I do think you ultimately just have to go, well, I'm here now and it's fine. Or look at, oh, you know what? I guess the thing with meditation, I take it to, it just depends on what you're focusing on, like how you're going to feel. I guess that's the ultimate sort of way out. If I focus on what's negative in my life or what's, you know, not in my life that I want, then, you know, I'm gonna have a really bad day. But if I can look at the stuff I like and that's great, and then I'm gonna feel good. It's so simple.
But it's knowing to want the right things,
I guess. And even that's, I guess that's just part of like the adult hero's journey.
Mm-hmm. All I want is power over another human being.
One other human being or just, lots?
Well, just one specific human being who just cowers in my presence, just shakes and smiles obsequiously.
Is this person...
Doesn't matter.
Is this person imprisoned in your home right now?
No, I'm saying this is what I want. It's just somebody, a yes person, who waits on me in fear.
You must have had jobs where you saw people who had that, right? Have you worked with someone?
That was my job, to provide that.
Oh, I see why you want it then.
There are...
Feel the other side of that.
Yeah, I just like to, you know, be able to send memos that say, I'm going to the theater, then I'm having dinner, I'll give notes on the script, then have everybody wait in the room for me. So just knowing that a room full of writers they're waiting 6 hours for my notes, and they can't go home. That, I think, would give me firm erections.
That's fun. Now, you haven't said Bill Maher, but that's who I'm picturing. or maybe Dennis Miller. Either way, it's fun. It's fun to just... I feel like, for anybody listening, maybe, like, go look at David's IMDb page and then also listen to this. At like sync it up, like Dark Side of the Moon and Wizard of Oz or whatever. You know what I mean? Like
the IMDb page, the IMDb?
Yeah. You know the letters.
That is an invasion of my privacy. I know you just got back from London, so I said privacy.
Thank you. You know, the word favorite has a U in it.
Yes. And when you went to the theatre.
I went to the theatre. I took the tube, which sounds so dirty.
The idea that my resume, my putative resume, because the IMDb thing doesn't get half of it, you know. The idea that somebody could go online and find out things about me. That's why celebrity, I'm not a celebrity, but I often think about like being self-destructive because I always complain that, you know, I'm not famous, but if somebody Googles me, I find it to be an invasion of my privacy. If somebody watches me on TV, I find it to be an invasion of my privacy. Like, why are you watching me? Why are you watching? Why'd you listen to my podcast? I've literally said that to friends. Why would you listen to my podcast? I don't go to where you work. You're invading my privacy. So am I self-destructive or afraid of success? Or am I smart and saying, you know what? I don't think I'd enjoy eating a sandwich, then shaking a stranger's hand, and then having to reach for Purell so I can go back to eating my sandwich. Maybe I don't want to be famous. Maybe I'm not self-destructive.
Well... You kind of went into two different areas there, if not more, of making a podcast. It's inherent that it would benefit you for people to listen to it.
But not people who love me, who care about me, who want to be my friend. This is like, wait a second.
Why would you ban them?
For the same reason I was married for close to 25 years and we had doors on the bathroom. We had separate bathrooms. I want privacy. This podcast is like the door to my bathroom being open, and you can see me shaving my legs. Oops. Oops. We're going to wrap it up. We're going to wrap it up. All right.
I think you just I don't know what to call it, but I feel like you just explored some level of mental illness. And I think it's important. It's important to get that out there.
All right. Laura, let's do this more often. I don't know why you keep resisting.
I don't know why you blow me off for months at a time.
I don't blow you off for months. I beg you to come back all the time.
Okay.
All right. Let's talk about how people can reach you.
LauraHouse.com.
Yes. I am Laura House.
Twitter.
I am Laura House. That's my favorite scene from Spartacus.
Yep, they all stood up and said it.
That's your Twitter handle. I am Laura House.
Yeah. Well, just the letter I am Laura House. And it's the same for Instagram, which I actually think is more, it's kind of a sweeter place to be than Twitter, to be honest.
Yes.
And yeah, my album is called Mouth Punch, and it's out by Comedy Dynamics. So it's on all the platforms, wherever you get CDs and stuff. It's there. Mouth Punch.
Fantastic. Stand in line for 1 second.
Okay, dude.